The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Good to be with you here on this this beautiful Tuesday afternoon here at Edstone. It's March, what is it, March 5th, so the days are getting longer and a little bit warmer. I was reminded this morning, too, that we're probably coming up on the staggered time change, so I'm not looking forward to that when we have to start the show a little bit earlier over here, but happens twice a year. And we'll have that coming up soon, I'm sure. Speaking of soon coming dates, we've got the Glasgow Pack that's scheduled for March 16th and 17th. I think Mr. Loker might have said the wrong dates last week. He was, I think, thinking of the Portland Pack. So we've got two packs coming up, one here in the UK and another one in Portland that my father's going to be presiding over. That's March 24th and 25th. But here in the UK, we've got Glasgow coming up in less than 2 weeks, Saturday evening, March 16th, and then the 17th, the second day of the two-day event. So far, we've invited 650 trumpet readers, and I think we've got the third letter that still needs to go out, the third invitation. That'll be going out, I think, Monday. But so far, we've got 41 people registered for the first day and then 30 for the second day. So it looks like it'll be a smaller group, perhaps comparable to the pack that we had in Belfast. But that's something certainly to be praying about these next 2 weeks, that we'd not only get a good number of people registered, but that we'd get a high percentage of those who register to actually show up for the event. So we've got to hurry and finalize some of the details ourselves on the crew and the travel arrangements and things that kind of got pushed back down the to-do list with all that has been going on in the last 2 or 3 weeks. I told you yesterday on the show, we hurried back from the college campout in order to give the live broadcast yesterday. And if you didn't hear that, I referred to this article from Herbert Armstrong. Well, the program itself, Never Compromise with the Chief Terrorist, and that was taken from an article by Mr. Armstrong in 1976, one that he wrote in response to this daring rescue mission down at Entebbe, Uganda, back in 1976. This hostage crisis, and just looking at the way Israel responded to it something like 43 years ago, very different than what you see happening today. The way that Israel, the way that the United States, the way that Britain deals with terrorism and with hostages in some cases. But I was struck by that article Mr. Armstrong wrote, because in it you see just how much that event in the world impacted him, and how it really did give him a sense of urgency. Jesus, after all, said to watch and pray always. We're commanded to watch world events. And wasn't it amazing? I won't read through some of the same quotes I gave to you yesterday, but wasn't it amazing the way that Herbert Armstrong reacted to that hostage crisis and what he wrote in The Plain Truth? And what he wrote in the Good News magazine as well, that Plain Truth piece from September 1976. I read some of this yesterday. He said, it's my commission to show many world leaders and nations the way to world peace, and to deliver to them the message of how world peace will come. He says the significance of this entire incident, speaking of that hostage crisis, and then the dramatic rescue of those hostages by those Israeli commandos. What's the significance of this entire incident, he asks. It seems every form of violence is being waged today One type or kind provokes another. Every form of violence. He writes, human nature is vanity, lust and greed, envy and jealousy, competition and violent strife, and rebellion against authority. And then Mr. Armstrong concludes by saying, there will never be peace on earth until human nature is changed. That's the solution. That's the solution, of course, that you hear nothing about today among commentators or even religious heads. Theologians don't discuss this. This change in human nature. We did get a few emails in response to that show yesterday where we went through some of that history. We referred to the Trumpet article from October on that daring rescue. One listener from Australia says, thanks so much for the show. It makes me more and more aware of how the spirit of appeasement has overtaken the spirit of boldness in God's precious truth. Another one said, if I could compare your program to a dinner, it sure would be steak and potatoes. Every time your program has such a topic as today's, it is fulfilling and stuffed with so much more. Never compromise with a chief terrorist. And then one last one here that says, the peace process we know of today is only telling of the butterflies of cowardice developing in the stomach of our nations of Israel, with lack of resolve to keep the law, so there is lack of any resolve at all. And such uncertainty of purpose leads to fear, which multiplies like parasites in the gut, draining the strength of our nations. That last one there touches on a prophecy in Isaiah 1 and elsewhere. There's a lack of resolve to keep the law, and therefore we have a lack of any resolve at all. The pride in our power, it's been broken. This is what lawlessness results in. So much violence, so much evil. One type or kind provokes another, as Mr. Armstrong said. There was a story in the New York Times yesterday. I read it before yesterday's show, but it didn't quite fit in with what I wanted to talk about or focus on, that Entebbe raid. But this was the featured story at the top of the front page of the New York Times about this hidden nightmare, as it's called, of all the sexual violence that happens around the border between the United States and Mexico. Of course, President Trump has drawn some attention to this in recent months, as he's been pleading for Congress to help him build a wall, a barrier, some kind of security fence at America's southern border. He gave a long speech on I think it was Saturday, the CPAC conference, and he got quite a lot of criticism from his enemies, as per usual. But this statement in particular, where he talked about the, as the New York Times puts it, this hidden nightmare that's happening with so many of these people fleeing Central America and then making this harrowing trek, something like 1,500 miles. And when you consider what they go through just to try to get to the United States, well, it tells you a little bit of something about the conditions of where they're living or where they come from. Listen to Donald Trump from the CPAC conference. This is clip one.
Mothers who love their daughters, give them massive amounts of birth control pills because they know their daughters are going to be raped on the way up to our southern border. Think of that. True story. Told to me by the Border Patrol. So true and so sad. Think of how evil that is. Think of how bad it is.
That's President Trump just relaying some of the facts from the ground. He says, think about how evil this is. This is the truth. And of course, as soon as he says that, then his enemies come out and say, well, it must be a lie. There was one feminist who responded to that statement in particular by saying, if you're the type of person who believes this, you are dumb and awful. You are dumb if you believe that sort of thing. The Border Patrol agents are saying it. President Trump is saying it. Even left-wing media outlets were saying it a few years ago. But now their political enemy says it. And so, well, it must not be true. In fact, it is true. And the more even his political enemies, the more they talk about it, the more the truth comes out. The New York Times, this piece from yesterday about this hidden nightmare, it says it was dark in the stash house where they kept her, speaking of one of these women that came across the border into a town just north of the border, southern Texas, I think it was. At first, the smugglers had her cook for the other migrants who had recently crossed illegally into the U.S. Then they took her to a room upstairs, locked the door, and began taking turns with her. It says it was the summer of 2014, and this 36-year-old mother of three had just completed the journey from her native Guatemala, crossing the Rio Grande on a raft before being led to this safe house at the Texas border. And it goes on to talk about how that this woman was basically held captive, locked in her room, and repeatedly violated, sexually assaulted over and over again by gangs of men. And this was in the view of these smugglers. This is how she paid them. Of course, she paid money too. But she had to pay with money and sex. The Times says here, on America's southern border, migrant women and girls are the victims of sexual assaults that most often go unreported, uninvestigated, and unprosecuted, even as women around the world are speaking out against sexual misconduct. This just goes on routinely. It's all along that harrowing journey from Guatemala all the way through Mexico and then even across into the United States. This kind of vile evil, these kinds of gruesome acts of violence, it's just routine. What a dark world. What did the New York Times say? The hidden nightmare. The Times says here, the stories are many and yet all too similar. Undocumented women making their way into American border towns have been beaten for disobeying smugglers, impregnated by strangers, coerced into prostitution, shackled to beds and trees, and in at least a handful of cases, bound with duct tape, rope, or handcuffs. And then the Times turns political, as you would expect. They can't leave Donald Trump out of the story. It's impossible. Well, I guess to be fair, he is the one drawing attention to this. And as my father's brought out before, he does a pretty good job of recognizing the evil. The Times says President Trump has used the threat faced by migrant women to make his case for a border wall. He's used the threat faced by migrant women to make his case for a border wall. And then it goes and gives a few quotes from President Trump's speeches. The Times then says, but less understood is that the violence that befalls migrant women happens not just during the perilous journey through Mexico. Much of it happens after women reach the supposed safety of the United States. And so you know what the Times is getting at. Well, it's bad on both sides of the border. So why build a wall? Why build the barrier? Well, in fact, it is bad on both sides of the border. Let's look at the bigger picture here for a moment. All of these revolting sexual assaults, these ghastly deeds. What does it say about our Sodom and Gomorrah society? What does it say about our civilization? And then for some of these feminists and for the Times and for whoever else to come out and criticize the president, even as these things are happening on both sides of the border, that's true. They're making the case for President Trump. We need more security. We need more law enforcement. We need more order at the border. It's lawlessness, out of control lawlessness, that's resulting in so many of these barbaric acts, these vile acts of sexual assault. The Huffington Post, this goes back to Obama's presidency, it said in 2014 that assaults are so common that many women and girls take contraceptives beforehand as preventative measures. So the Huffington Post, the left-wing Huffington Post, said essentially the same thing President Trump just said on Saturday. In fact, that same Post article, this was from 2014, the title, the headline, reads, 80% of Central American women, girls, are raped crossing into the United States. 80%. This is a crisis, an emergency, if ever there was one. This is an emergency where real women, girls, teenagers, preteens in some cases, are being violently raped. And yet for some, because the Trump derangement syndrome is so strong and has them just cloaked in total darkness, they can't see the truth. They won't accept the facts. It's like Melanie Phillips said last week in that interview that we played on Thursday. Everything has to fit within those parameters that Donald Trump is evil. And so the story, if it's going to be written, if it has to be written, then the reader must understand that President Trump is using this threat. He's using this threat to make his case for a border wall. We can't let him do that. You look at even some of the things that were going on while we were away at the campout. President Trump back in, just last week when he was in Vietnam and he was trying to come to some sort of a denuclearization for North Korea, something that just looking at it purely on its facts alone would benefit oncoming generations. If you take these dangerous weapons out of the hands of a madman. But as Andy McCarthy brought out at National Review, here, as he was overseas, trying to come to some kind of a deal, and it didn't work out very well for him, but here he is overseas, and in Congress, you had this spectacle with Michael Cohen, the Cohen hearing. I forget when it was, Wednesday or Thursday of last week. But McCarthy says this hearing could have been held at any time. In other words, why did you do it right when he's in the midst of this crucial overseas trip? And here they bring Michael Cohen into Congress. It had been postponed before, but in this case, the Democrats insisted it had to be on that day, that same day. It was last Wednesday. McCarthy says no president of either party should be unnecessarily undermined when he is overseas pursuing what the country overwhelmingly agrees is a vital American interest. A non-nuclear North Korea. It says Trump is not going to be president forever. Democrats will regret shredding norms of good governance in their zeal to be rid of him. The point that he makes is that it used to be, even if you didn't like the president, it used to be that you'd get behind him. You'd show support where there was universal agreement that yes, it would make good sense and it would bring more peace and safety to the world if you took the nuclear weapons out of the hands of the North Korean government. But in the minds of the radical left and all of their allies in the media, again, the top story is we've got to get rid of Donald Trump. That's the most important story. So as he goes overseas, we've got to do everything that we can to make him look bad, even as he's trying to negotiate this deal. Victor Davis Hanson, a couple days ago at American Greatness, he talked about just this unbelievably radical swing further to the left that you see among the Democrats. Hanson says Senator Bernie Sanders also does not get it that the socialist movement of 2016 is now ancient history. Well, I'll just paraphrase some of this, but it's basically saying how that more and more, you remember how radical Bernie Sanders seemed back in 2016? We had trumpet articles. He didn't get the nomination because of Hillary Clinton's cheating. But as we wrote at the Trumpet, he had a lot of support, especially among young people. And now that's 2016. Now you fast forward to 2019, not even 3 years. And he's seen among Democrats, quite a few among the base. Bernie Sanders is seen as too far to the center of all things. So you've got this new crop of Democrats, quite a few of them now in Congress. I'll just give you this one paragraph from Hanson's article. He says, recently leftists have castigated Bernie for daring to run again in 2020, a gambit that would certainly drain support from a new generation of more deserving identity politics progressives. See, there's a new generation, and they want to take America even further to the left. Hanson says Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, John Kerry, the Clintons, and other senior Democratic grandees forged late-life careers on loudly talking about this and that community, dropping race and gender into almost every sentence. But as in every historical left-wing stampede into extremism, the eventual nihilism, yesterday's radical, is today's reactionary. Certainly, they never quite realized they themselves would eventually lose their exemption and be rendered white privileged incorrect. It says, compared to Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton may not be deemed a deplorable, but compared to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she may be an elderly white and privileged irredeemable. Mr. Armstrong, remember that quote I gave to you yesterday about the pride of our power being broken? He attributed that prophecy, Leviticus 26:19, to the fact that the American people have been fed so much leftist propaganda. And look at how far to the left it's lurching. Speaking of the new darling for the leftist media, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she made this statement, I believe it was yesterday, just about how that, you know, President Trump goes on and on about the fact that there's no collusion. And she says that's really not what we should be talking about. This is what she said.
So while he's talking collusion, I think in oversight, we should be talking about taxes. And his bank account, his financial statements, because that's where I think actually some of the most troubling practices are with direct relevance to the American people under the scope of oversight.
So it's all about getting Donald Trump, taking down Donald Trump. It's going to be nonstop, as we've said before. Even when the Mueller report comes out and it's proof positive, there is no collusion. They're moving on to taxes. They're moving on to his financial statements. They're moving on to his business dealings. They've got to find crime because they know he's evil. And so that's objective number one. In all the other stories, even the hidden nightmare of these women, 80% of them being raped, some of them repeatedly, many of them gang raped. Even as that nightmare unfolds, the New York Times has to find some kind of a way to spin this. Well, President Trump is using this. He's using this tragedy to get what he wants. As I said earlier, you can go back to that Huffington Post article in 2014 and you get the straight scoop. 80% of Central American women, of Central American girls, raped while crossing into the U.S. And Huffington Post pointed out that it was, well, that's up from 60%, according to Amnesty International report. It says, but while many of these girls are fleeing their homes because of fears of being sexually assaulted, they are still meeting that same fate on their journey to freedom. Rape can be perpetrated by anyone along the way, including guides, fellow migrants, bandits, or government officials. Sometimes sex is used as a form of payment when women and girls don't have the money to pay bribes. The assaults are so common. Listen to this. This is from 2014. The assaults are so common that many women and girls take contraceptives beforehand as preventative measures. Now, that's exactly what President Trump said on Saturday. That Huffington Post piece was from 2014. President Trump made his statement in 2019. And then the New York Times comes along and says, well, yeah, you have to keep in mind that it's worse. It is bad. Okay, we'll acknowledge it's bad. But it's pretty bad on our side of the border as well. And, well, that's true. That's true. The New York Times said, experts say the actual number of sexual assaults is almost certainly much higher than those documented by prosecutors and the police because most attacks are never reported. And such attacks don't end at the border. Women have reported being assaulted in immigration detention facilities. So as I say, if you just strip away the bias and why the New York Times would approach it from this angle, and just look at the ugliness, the dreadful, awful, ghastly acts of sexual assault happening all along the way. It's a violent world. It's like Mr. Armstrong said. Mr. Armstrong was watching world events all through his ministry, and he looked. I gave you the example yesterday, 1976. And he talked about how that this world doesn't know the way to peace. We see violence in every form, and one type or kind provokes another. What is the solution? The solution is the return of Jesus Christ and changing human nature. There will never be peace on earth until human nature is changed. That's what Herbert Armstrong said following that Entebbe mission. He said here, this is from his 1976 Plain Truth article, there will never be peace on earth until human nature is changed. And it is my commission to tell the world that unseen, strong hand does exist and will intervene in our generation to bring us world peace. Even in spite of the totally unsuccessful efforts of human man to accomplish it. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send feedback to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
V
The developed nations have made awesome progress. They have produced a highly mechanized world, providing every luxury, modern convenience, and means of pleasure. Yet they are cursed with crime, violence, injustice, sickness and disease, broken homes and families. At the same time, more than one half the world is living in illiteracy, abject poverty, filth and squalor. Violence and destruction are rapidly multiplying. Many ask, why, if God exists, does he allow so much violence and human suffering? To understand the reason behind this astonishing paradox, request a complimentary copy of Mystery of the Ages. We were born into this 20th century world as it is. We take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. We see what is occurring at that point, but not having seen it from the beginning and not knowing how events developed to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. Mystery of the Ages transports you back to the beginning of the movie, to the foundation of this present evil world. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Last week on the program, I think I might have referred to this article. If not, we can go through it here in some detail. But it was from the BBC a few weeks ago. Are we on the road to civilization collapse? Just following on what we discussed there in the first segment. Look at this world today. And even in the BBC, now again, you have to consider the angle, climate change, it's going to destroy the world. But still, some of the facts and figures that are put out there, and more importantly, the history. Look at these great civilizations of the past. Look at the great empires of the past. And what do you see in all of them? You see a rise to power. And then you see the inevitable fall. And that's what we're seeing today. Even though our people, whether you're in the United States or here in Britain, we're carrying on as if it's just going to continue, that the collapse will never happen. Well, in fact, as Mr. Armstrong brings out in the U.S. and Britain in Prophecy, it's already happened to Great Britain. It's lost all of its empire, all of its wealth, all of its power, its worldwide power. It hasn't been overthrown and enslaved yet. Herbert Armstrong wrote in Mystery of the Ages, you think about that chapter in the middle, the mystery of civilization. Again, these are things I talked about, the solutions that you don't hear about. The solutions to the problems that we see in this world, all of the violence and the many different forms that it takes. As Mr. Armstrong said in that 1976 piece, violence being waged. Today, one type or kind provokes another. It just gets worse and worse. 2 Timothy 3. But this BBC piece, it talks about how that it just happens all throughout history, and yet it talks about the reasons for it and doesn't really give a clear, conclusive explanation as to why civilizations collapse. In any event, here's what Herbert Armstrong said. This is in Mystery of the Ages. God will not intervene and usher in the next world under the kingdom of God until the remnant of mankind has been brought to fully realize human inability to solve problems or bring worldwide peace in happiness and joy. It says man must be brought to realize his helplessness and futility without God. This is the lesson, the central lesson that God's trying to teach us. The fact that we're helpless without him, it's just all a a futile exercise. Romans 1, I went through that recently on this program. We fool ourselves, though. We bury our heads in the sand when it comes to all of this vile filth that you see spewing out of our countries. And then we assume that, well, because of technological advancements, that we must be progressing. We must be improving as a society. There was a headline over the weekend at the Daily Mail while we were away at the campout about the internet. I guess it turned 30 years old. We passed the 30-year anniversary of the internet. And quotes one of the people involved in its development back in the day as saying that it's now a completely out-of-control monster because of all of the corruption, the filth that spreads so fast on the internet, the bullying, the fake news, the hysteria, and you can add to that the pornography, the violence. You can learn how to be a terrorist on the internet. You can view all kinds of filth, the kinds of things we discussed in the first segment. The kinds of things happening in the so-called safe houses. They're not so safe. Well, that's all over the internet. Is this bringing us down? All of this evil, all of this trouble. What is behind it? There's a real spirit world. We see evidence. We see proof of Satan's existence every day. As Mr. Armstrong said in that article I quoted yesterday, he's the chief terrorist. He's the father of lies, the father of sexual assaults, the father of all kinds of sexual perversions. He's the father of family dysfunction. He's the father of division and strife. He's the father of violence. So this BBC piece from a couple weeks ago, it says great civilizations are not murdered. Instead, they take their own lives. So concluded the historian Arnold Toynbee in his 12-volume magnum opus, A Study of History. It was an exploration of the rise and fall of 28 different civilizations. So this has happened 28 times. The rise and then the fall. This article says he was right in some respects. Civilizations are often responsible for their own decline. However, their self-destruction is usually assisted. So it's sickness from within and, of course, attacks from without. That's what the Bible prophesies. The article says the Roman Empire, for example, was the victim of many ills, including overexpansion, climate change, environmental degradation, and poor leadership, but it was also brought to its knees when Rome was sacked by the Visigoths in 410 and the Vandals in 455. In fact, that was prophesied. You can go back to the book of Daniel. I won't take the time to go into these prophecies. But listen to the BBC here. Think of civilization as a poorly built ladder. As you climb each step that you used, as you climb, rather, each step that you used falls away. A fall from a height of just a few rings or rungs is fine. Yet the higher you climb, the larger the fall. Eventually, once you reach a sufficient height, any drop from the ladder is fatal. You think about the United States and Great Britain, the greatest empire in the history of mankind, and in the case of the United States, the greatest single superpower in the history of the world. But like this author brings out, the higher you climb, the larger, the more devastating, the more catastrophic the fall will be. It says, with the proliferation of nuclear weapons, we may have already reached this point of civilizational terminal velocity. Any collapse, any fall from the ladder risks being permanent. Nuclear war in itself could result in an existential risk, either the extinction of our species or the permanent catapult back to the Stone Age? Well, you think about Matthew 24, verses 21 and 22, and Jesus himself said, if it wasn't for God's intervention, we would destroy ourselves. Well, this isn't, you don't see enough of these kinds of articles, but as we researched into this a little bit more, there have been some ones that stand out over the last few years. This headline from 2016 says, "Failed States and the Paradox of Civilization, New Lessons from History." Before that, in 2014, The New Statesman, it said, "What rises must fall." This seems to most of us almost as much a law in the field of geopolitics as it is in physics. Every Western country that has ever won an empire or a superpower status for itself has lived with a consciousness of its own mortality. You just see it over and over again. It's astounding. Even in the case of this Napoleon book that we're reading, it's astounding just how fast it happens. Here he's on top of the world, Napoleon. 1808, 1809. Then he starts running into problems with the Russian expedition. And then, of course, eventually the empire is, it's over. It's over. It's done with. How many times has it happened over and over again? This New Statesman piece from 2014, it says, in Britain, which only a century ago ruled the largest agglomeration of territory the world has ever seen, we have a particular cause. It says, back in 1897, at the seeming pinnacle of the empire, on which the sun never set, subject peoples from across the world gathered in London to mark the Diamond Jubilee of Queen Victoria. That wasn't that long ago, just a little over a century. It says today in Washington, D.C., precisely the same anxieties are being aired, and this is further on in the article, it says, and the example of Rome is often explicitly cited. In 2007, the then Comptroller General of the U.S., David Walker, gave a bleak assessment of the nation's prospects. America, he claimed, was afflicted by precisely the problems that he saw as responsible for the collapse of Rome. Now, you think about what this church, well, going back even to the days of the Worldwide Church of God, they produced a booklet in 1971 called The Modern Romans. And the point of the booklet was that we're going the same way as Rome. The higher you climb, the more catastrophic the fall will be. This New Statesman piece, by the way, it goes through some prophecies from the book of Daniel. You don't see that much in the commentaries today. But you step back, looking at the news from that first segment, all the evil, the violence, the abuse happening in those Central American nations, you can hardly fault them for wanting to flee, to try to make it into the United States. And then they're just basically taking contraceptives along the way, anticipating rape, anticipating sexual assault. This is just one problem. My father talked about, in his Trumpet article from 2008, he talked about, well, starvation being one of literally thousands of major problems plaguing civilization. Sickness, he said, disease, pollution, illiteracy, family breakdown, moral collapse, crime, corruption, slavery, racial hatred, religious tension, terrorism, warfare, the spread of weapons of mass destruction. He said, it seems that for every crisis we tamp down, three more rise up in its place. Isn't that the truth? Okay, so there's an illegal immigration crisis. That's one. And you try to tamp it down. You try to enforce border security. You try to enforce the border security laws. Or you try to build a barrier. But as we brought out at the Trumpet, for every crisis that we tamp down, it's like three more rise up in its place. And this is happening. This is happening in our modern era. With all of the wealth, with all of the prosperity, all of the blessings of Abraham, all the technology, all of the advancement in the gadgets. But look at what's happening to our civilization. It's a civilization on the verge of collapse. So says the BBC. Now, the BBC may not have all the answers. And they certainly don't understand all the causes. But there's enough of an awareness of history to at least get a message out there that this happens over and over again. Mr. Armstrong said in Mystery of the Ages that the problem is that the house, to paraphrase Psalm 127 and verse 1, it wasn't built on the right foundation. Our house, our society, our civilization, it was propped up on a faulty foundation, and therefore it is bound to fall. And the higher we go up, the greater the crash, the more spectacular the fall will be, the more catastrophic will be its destruction. He said in Mystery of the Ages, civilization as we know it was built not on the foundation of God and his direction, but on man's self-reliance under the deception and the sway of Satan. You can go back to the way that it all started. I'll go through that in just a moment. But to just focus again on this this booklet produced in 1971, The Modern Romans, it says people could have sounded the alarm there in the last years of the Roman Empire, the great Roman Empire, saying things like, look, we're involved in too many wars. There's too much taxation. There's all this crime at home. There's these race riots, this moral decay. We're going to collapse if we continue on this road. But like the booklet brings out, the everyday, ordinary Roman citizen at the time thought that, well, that's not, now that, I mean, I will acknowledge that there are some problems in our empire, but we're not going to collapse. That would be idiotic to think that way. Well, just like in ancient Rome, there's millions upon millions of people in the United States, in Great Britain, that say there's no possible way we could suffer a similar fate as the great Roman Empire, what was once great. But look at our violent cities. Look at the out-of-control spending. Look at the escalating debts, all of the wars, and of course, the moral decay, the decadence. Is it really impossible for something like this to happen to the United States, to Great Britain? Mr. Armstrong said, this was back in a World Tomorrow broadcast, I forget the time that this went to air, but here's what he had to say, clip three.
You know, there was a time it got to be a disgrace to work down in Rome. They got wealthy and pampered and living in idleness and ease and luxury, and they got their minds on entertainment and amusement and sports where they didn't want to go out and participate themselves, that is most of the people, but they paid the professional performers to perform for them. They wanted their sports more exciting, more brutal, just like we do now today, and we're going the way of ancient Rome. And they wanted to rely on the government to support them, so of course taxes went way up, just like they are here in the United States. And the main thing was they didn't want to work. Well, you know, up north there were the barbarians. They were ignorant. They didn't know as much as the Romans. They weren't as educated. They weren't the nice, dandy gentlemen that the gentlemen down at Rome were. But they were tough. And they were strong. And they had good health. even if their minds weren't as daintily educated. And so finally the barbarians came down and overran them and conquered them, and what happened to Rome? Well, it fell, good and hard. My friends, we're riding to a great fall right here in the United States right now, and we don't realize it.
That's from Herbert Armstrong's radio program many, many years ago, talking about the United States going the way of Rome. I mentioned that quote from my father's article back in 2008. The more we try to tamp down these crises, the more crises rise up in their places. Clearly, our knowledge, as modern and as sophisticated as so many people think that we are, clearly the knowledge, the education that our universities are churning out, that knowledge is not solving the problems of this world. The more that that knowledge increases and multiplies, the more our evils increase and multiply. 30 years on for the internet, something that started off so small, and this is a spectacular development. Many thought, I'm sure, back at the time. But now it's an out-of-control monster. It all goes back to the foundation. In fact, you want to get to root causes, it all goes back to the Garden of Eden and the two trees. Adam and Eve taking for themselves from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And then God taking the action of cutting them off from the tree of life. Mr. Armstrong said in Mystery of the Ages, mankind is nearing the end of his rope. But even now, God will not intervene to save this defiant humanity from itself until man is finally brought to the point where, if God delayed longer in intervention, man would annihilate himself. God will not intervene and usher in the next world under the kingdom of God until the remnant of mankind has been brought to fully realize human inability to solve problems or to bring worldwide peace in happiness and joy. And then it says, and this is very similar to the previous quote I gave you, man must be brought to realize his helplessness and futility without God. A few years ago, my father gave a Key of David program about the world tomorrow, the wonderful world tomorrow. And in it, he talked about the problem with the world today. I think this is from 2009, but here's clip 4.
What is wrong with this civilization today? If you look at the education of this world, it has educated those leaders into believing what they believe, and they helped to establish that education. But what is wrong with it? What is wrong with it? Most people don't understand that for 6,000 years, about 6,000 years ago, God sentenced this world to be cut off from Him and His revelation. And if you don't have His revelation, you don't have true education. But God sentenced the world 6,000 years to be cut off from Him and that revelation.
That's some truth that's right from Mystery of the Ages. The sentence, 6,000 years, Mr. Armstrong said in his book. One, reviewing the multiplied evils in the world today, might think man has cut himself off from God, but it is God who cut off mankind from Him. It's God who cut us off. It's God who sentenced us. It's God who said, okay, you've chosen from the tree I told you not to take from. And so now go ahead and build your own societies, build your own civilization, build up your own system of government and commerce and industry and education, and yes, even religion. Read about it in Genesis 3. verses 22 through 24. God drove out the man, it says. He drove them out. He cut them off from the tree of life. These are things you don't hear about today. The commentators don't talk about this. They don't talk about the problems, the causes of these problems, and how to solve them. God's way, not man's way. Man has proven he can't solve them. God took action. God cut them off from the tree of life and guarded the tree of life against man's return. That tree won't be opened up to all of mankind until the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. And that is when man's nature will begin to change. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to send in some feedback or some comments to these shows, you can email them to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us on today's program, and we'll see you tomorrow.